You are now listening to The Scheist Podcast, when millions of opinions just aren't enough.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Scheist Podcast. It has been a while, but we are back for a new episode of This Week at the Movies. In this case, it's more like last month at the movies. So we've got a lot of ground to cover with a look back at Last Breath, the documentary from 2019, just for context. But also, we're looking at new releases like Captain America, Brave New World, Black Bag, Death of a Unicorn, Mickey 17, The Gorge, Locked, and The Parenting. So thank you for hanging out and sticking with us. At the end of the show, we take a moment to say goodbye to a friend. This is This Week at the Movies for April 4th, 2025.
We're back.
We are.
Yeah, it's. I think this is going to be what, last month at the movies?
March at the movies, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot.
There's a lot.
There's a lot. Maybe we'll do that in like the end of the episode. I'm sure people know. Maybe they don't, but.
If they've listened to other shows.
If they listen to other shows, if they look at the social media stuff, they will know. But we'll get to that because. We've been slowly plodding along, trying to work our way back into seeing some movies, and there's a lot of outliers. There's a lot of stuff that came out in February and March that I wanted to see that we still got a lot of work to do. I think we last left off having talked about Last Breath. That was like the last episode, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And then we said we were going to watch the documentary, which we did. Mm-hmm. So I think we should just start there briefly.
Okay.
Because I think it was a 2019 documentary, 2020?
I think it was 2019. It was 5 or 6 years ago.
So same exact story. The Woody Harrelson Simu Liu movie is based on this documentary. And what I ultimately said was I just wanted to watch the doc to get a better understanding of the story and maybe the emotional beats of it as well. And I feel like the documentary was better. Obviously, it's like it's still dramatic, but it's not as dramatic. I felt like the person, Chris, at the center of it was more the focal point.
Yeah.
Whereas the actor in the movie is the least famous actor, so he's only getting so much slack.
Screen time.
Yeah, yeah. But also what I found interesting was that one of the things they omitted from the movie is that when they're in the pressurization tanks, when they're being brought to like depth pressure over time, which they spend time in the tanks for like, what, a month, 20 days before they dive?
Yeah, I feel like in the movie, they only did it, the time lapse was like 2 days or 3 days. And same with coming back. I think they also spend a month in those tanks as well. And I think in the movie, they portrayed it as just like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. And I mean, granted, the story is mostly about the rescue effort and the accident and all that. I get that. But it seems like psychologically, the most interesting thing is the characters or the people. Sort of like getting close because they're living in very, very, very close quarters for an extended period of time. And one thing that the Hollywood dramatization of the movie does not let you in on is that the way that they pressurize the environment is they use helium. So yeah. The entire time, once they step into the tanks to once they're decompressed and get out after the job is over, we're all talking like this, like so.
Like when you inhale,
yeah,
helium from a balloon.
Exactly. So they don't even touch on that, which they could have in the movie. It could have just been like, "Oh, don't worry, your voice will normalize. But I think in that moment where you're first being introduced to that environment, it would have brought some levity to the situation to have everybody like that. But when you watch the documentary footage and you hear them on the radio talking to like the command center, you can hear that their voices are all like that. But like, you know, you're doing this crazy rescue mission. You're saving this guy's life. You bring him back into the diving bell and you're trying to wake him up. And you're like, Chris, are you okay? Talk to me, Chris. But if it's all Chris, are you okay? Like, it's not going to play right.
Yeah.
So I understand the creative choice to batten down the hatches on that one.
Yeah. I also was hopeful, like what I had mentioned when we talked about the theatrical film, was I wanted more information about the job itself. And I feel like we did get more of that in the documentary and talking about like how few people do this. You know, we kind of learned a little bit more too of Chris and what was Woody Harrelson's name?
Alcock.
Sorry. Yeah, that Woody Harrelson, you know, who he's playing, and Chris actually had a longer term diving history, when it's implied and I feel like it's insinuated in the theatrical trailer, but we see a little bit more of that in the documentary, I think. But we just learn more about how torturous really this job is to have, and I understand why not many people do it and why it is viewed as one of the most dangerous jobs in the world.
Oh yeah, super dangerous.
I was like, do not sign me up for this. You could never pay me enough money to try and do this. It was intense.
I also think one of the documentary choices that lends it some humanity is the fact that Chris himself was doing like his first kind of dive like this. Mm-hmm. And so he was recording himself a lot, yeah. Which you could have included that like in the movie. You could have introduced us to this character as this very amicable, happy guy who's like videotaping the crew, like, you know, who's videotaping the people up on the deck and like establishing these relationships. And you can even tell it that way. But it just feels like we didn't get to know Chris in like a particularly meaningful way in the Hollywood version of the story.
Yeah, I liked the self video footage. And also, like I said, I think the only real footage until the end of the movie that they used in the Hollywood version was the shots of him on the platform. That was in the theater version.
Yeah, I mean, they could have recreated that, but oh, I got a frog on my throat.
They could have, but I mean, I think that was, it looked like it was real footage.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been. But yeah, that's just, it's worth watching. If you enjoyed the movie or you're interested and curious about that story and want to learn more, I think it is worth watching the documentary. So if we're trying to like reverse engineer our way back, I think the one after that was Mickey 17, which is Bong Joon-ho's new one with Pattinson and Mark Ruffalo. I think that was like the first back to the theater movie we saw.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert Pattinson was fantastic.
He was really good. I liked it. I think it's going to be a movie that over time, it's like going to be rewatchable in a fun way. And like, I think that having had the success of Parasite, mm-hmm, before this, watching Bong get to sort of make a satirical comedy about like imperialism and do it with the kind of character that Mark Ruffalo represents as almost like
too close to home.
Yeah. Cult leader, charismatic but stupid, rich, wants to be a politician, but I forget what his like actual character design was, but I think he ran for president or something and lost, and then decided to take his like cult of people and go to a new planet and basically treat the indigenous life there like it's worthless, like it's monstrous. So, yeah, I mean, as a work of satire, I think it hits the notes. I don't like the whole I guess the mechanism of the movie is maybe where people have a little bit of a sticking point, because I'm going into the movie mostly for the sci-fi nature of it, to see the lives of these characters in an environment where human life is sort of treated in the way that it's disposable. You sign up for this thing, you just get killed over and over again in the name of science, research, exploration, war in some cases. So I was more interested in that angle of the story, which it doesn't lean into as much as I thought that it would, because it leans into more of like the political satire and the social satire that it is. I mean, you have Toni Collette just making sauces. Like, she's obsessed with sauces. It's so bizarre. But you do have this kind of subtle under-commentary on the way that they treat a person that they see as disposable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's like that's emphasized in the dinner scene where he like poisons him just to see if like the poison works, and then he's writhing in pain. Like, you know, so there is this grotesquerie in play between the rich, stupid elites that don't care but can do this, and then like the poorest social class that
they prey upon.
Well, because Mickey's character is in debt, which is what forces him to have to take on this horrible agreement. So it's like, think about it like one of those cash advance places, like we saw in that other comedy. I can't remember the name of it right now, but where you have Cat Williams banging on the window saying like, don't go in there because if you miss a payment, like your interest rate. So it's like this predatory kind of debt. And so, you know, we saw also in Squid Game is a show about people with crippling debt and doing really sort of outlandish things in order to try to eliminate that debt. So I feel like the awareness is there. I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's not my favorite, and they think it's a step down for him. And like, I didn't see it that way. I get that Parasite does things in a particular way that's maybe more palatable, but I had fun with Mickey 17. I'll definitely watch it again. I mean, 17 is my number, so it's kind of like I got to anyway.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting about, excuse me, the twist around not being able to have two at a time. And I feel like I would have been okay with getting more of that storyline.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it was done well. The cast was great. I mean, Robert Pattinson was really good. It's nice to see him break out in these kind of roles. And yeah, it was just like, there's a lot of themes that are a little too close to home in our current state right now of the world and the country.
Yeah. And I think to your point, I like movies where characters play dual roles. And having recently covered Multiplicity for the Bymon Sci-Fi Con show over at Bad Movies We Love, it was great watching Michael Keaton in all of those different iterations. So I wouldn't have minded seeing like maybe three or four or five Pattinsons that are all slightly different variations of the same personality. But that's not what that movie is for the most part. It kind of uses that idea as leverage to tell this other story.
Yeah, and I feel like he still got to have a little fun with it because
he had a lot of fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, there's still there's different personalities. It's just they're not all coming out necessarily at once, but you know, I think it's good for him to get to flex those muscles.
Yeah, and I don't think we've ruined anything about the movie if you haven't seen it yet, so you're probably in good shape. All right, so then what did we watch? The Gorge? The Apple TV.
I thought we watched The Parenting first.
All right. Well, let's talk about The Parenting then.
Okay.
They were both at-home couch watches, and you asked me if I wanted to watch it. I didn't know what it was. So I had I had no real vested interest in it one way or the other, but you suggested it. I just was like, okay, fine. So like, why did you want to watch it in the first place, I guess?
Well, you know, my girl's in it. Lisa Kudrow.
Is that why? Okay.
So I was super excited. And Edie Falco. I was like, oh man, any kind of comedy, even if it's like a horror comedy with Edie Falco and Lisa Kudrow, sign me up. I loved the whole cast, though, but I was definitely in it for Lisa Kudrow, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we see Dean Norris, Brian Cox, Parker Posey as well. So a lot of like familiar faces that I would want to see in sort of a dark comedy. It was good. It was a lot better than I would have expected. It has pretty low ratings in comparison. It's got a 45 Metascore and a 5.7 IMDb. This could be a Bad Movie Futures.
All right, episode. I'll take it. Okay. I'll take this one for me.
No, it's off the board already, so there you go.
Why?
No, I'm saying...
For me.
Yeah, nobody else can take it.
It's mine. I think,
it'd be the first movie of 25, I think.
Okay. I think that... It was a Netflix movie, too, I think, right?
It was Max.
Oh, it was Max.
HBO, whatever.
Yeah. So I think, you know, not without knowing the like, I didn't watch a full trailer for it. I just saw who the cast was and I was like, I'm in. But for the kind of movie it was, and I liked the two sons that play the love interest a lot in general. But I think for a kind of semi rom-com horror comedy, like there's a lot of genres they threw in this. I felt like they pulled it off really well, and it was very enjoyable. I wasn't expecting it to not be good, but I was pleasantly surprised with how good it was and how much I loved it.
Yeah, I think had you not had like Lisa Kudrow and Parker Posey and Dean Norris, like had you not had all of like the veteran heavy hitters in the cast, maybe it doesn't work as well, because I think it buys some time and some grace for Nick Dadani and Brandon Flynn to find their operating wavelength, mm-hmm. because they are the main characters mm-hmm. in the film, and they're a gay couple. They're meeting at this cabin or this house that they've rented, and their parents, I think, are meeting for the first time. So there's a lot of pressure. I mean, this is a setup that we've seen sort of in like rom-coms before, but really it's kind of more a horror comedy than it is a romantic comedy. And that's where having a Parker Posey and a Lisa Kudrow...
Really
good. Yeah, and I mean, like, Brian Cox was really good in this. We've, you know, seen him on Succession as the evil Logan Roy for so long that this sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because he's kind of like a dick to start with, but then he really has fun hamming it up as, like, the evil version of himself. And Edie Falco, the very persnickety kind of, like... I'm a good mom because I adopted a kid kind of character. And then you have Lisa Kudrow and Dean Norris, who are like very laid back, but also kind of like little oblivious, a little naive maybe. So it's a good formula and you get good performances. I think it's better than the ratings suggest. And I would recommend it. It's a good at home, chill couch watch. And I feel like a lot of horror comedies focus on like a weird energy, where I feel like some of the horror stuff in this like works pretty well, because it's almost like it's a movie made for kids, but it is rated R and it's only an hour and a half,
which is definitely my speed.
Yeah, kind of like if you took like a Scooby-Doo episode but then really made sure that it was for adults, because the comedy is very much for adults. The horror is like good horror filmmaking techniques on display. Some of the stuff is scary, but then also the way that the characters interact with that is like they're over the top scared. So it's not really meant to scare you, but it is done with craftsmanship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
It was great. I liked it.
Cool. So then we watched The Gorge, which was awful. Scott Derrickson. I was going to say it was Scott Derrickson's new movie on Apple, but Yeah, I didn't love this. I wanted to. This has a 6.7 on IMDb and a 57 Metascore, so.
I mean, Miles Teller carried this movie.
He did. And the truth is, I like Scott Derrickson. He's made a lot of movies that I enjoy. He did Black Phone just recently, Exorcism of Emily Rose.
I was talking about this with some people at my physical therapy office.
Oh.
And I was like, it was not good, but Miles Teller was in it. Okay. And someone's like, oh, I love Miles Teller. I'm like, then you'll love it because he's in it. But that's all it's got going for him.
Is that your boy? Is that your boy?
My boy?
Yeah.
No.
No. Okay.
But it's Miles Teller.
Well, I'm looking at this and I feel like its energy is all over the place. It says dark romance, monster horror, survival, action, adventure, horror, romance, sci-fi. And to me, I'm like, this movie doesn't strike me as a sci-fi movie at all. And then there's like at a certain point, it's like, OK, I guess technically it's kind of sci-fi horror. The romance did not work for me.
No, it did not.
Yeah. And
they didn't have chemistry.
I think it's a interesting idea, but to pull back from the moments where they're beginning to build chemistry in a relationship and then like you just pause that, have this huge crazy like monster action, and then like, oh no, we're gonna go back into this other tone. There's like these just really harsh tonal shifts between those two identities. And so the first half of the movie I felt like was more of a struggle for me. I think we both decided to just like take naps in the middle of it.
I'm pretty sure I slept through most of this.
Yeah. And then I woke up and I was like,
you
okay.
You napped too?
I did. And then I paused it and I was like, I'm going to go back and watch the second half. And I feel like the second half is a lot better than the first half because it gives up on the idea of like it being a romantic comedy type of movie and just is what it is.
But it has a rom-com ending.
Yeah, it does. It does. But the last hour of the movie is kind of like all action. You get to see the production design that really cool when you get into the gorge itself and you see some of the design of all that stuff. But as much as I like Miles Teller and as much as I like Anya Taylor-Joy individually, they didn't have chemistry, in my opinion. And I think it's a good example, like we've talked about before, of
two
like
pretty people.
Yeah, putting two pretty people together just doesn't mean automatic chemistry.
Yeah. It's very true.
And I think the hard part is that they're both stationed on opposite sides of this gorge, right? That's the movie, is that they're both on opposite sides. And so the way they communicate, it's like they have to do so much work for the audience. Like she has to be immediately into him in order to make it even remotely work. When the character that we meet heading there doesn't seem like she's going to be the person who's just like, oh, this American a mile away from me that I'm looking at over binoculars, we're going to write on like note cards to each other. This is how we're going to be like so flirtatious and our chemistry is going to be that strong in this environment. So I felt like that part was the hard part because it's really like it focuses on needle drops a lot to be like, we paid good licensing to get the music, to have these moments where she's dancing and they're partying. And yeah, just the two of them, there was something there. And I don't know why they decided to go with the Russian accent again. She's a great actress. This is the second time where they've saddled her with a Russian accent that isn't good.
Yeah. It's disappointing, especially because I think it takes away from her being able to do what she can do as an actress. It's very distracting that it's like, because that part is so bad, it doesn't matter what her performance is at that point.
I feel like the movie is just like, doesn't commit to the campy nature that it could, like, if it's going to be sort of like, well, I mean, there's also Love and Monsters, which is kind of a similar idea, but like if the movie were to commit that it's goofy, then I could see this sort of energy working. But it takes itself very seriously when it wants to take itself seriously. Like the monster element of it is taken very seriously. So
yeah,
it is a little funky when, you know, everything is kind of like sunshine and rainbows between the two of them. I'm trying to think of like a good example of something that leans into that kind of energy and it works, but maybe like something like Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds is like that type of movie. Mm. I don't know.
I don't either. Not great. I forgot we even watched it.
Yeah, the Grey.
Sorry, Miles.
Call it the Greyish. Yeah, there's just a lot of categories on that, and it's hard to. Sometimes you just gotta like pick one and know what you're doing and
like, and do it well.
Yeah, like I said, I like Scott Derrickson. He's shown that he's a very capable director here. I feel like the horror sci-fi elements of the movie are very strong. The romance just didn't work for me. And a lot of the movie is committed to that early on.
Yeah, and the visual effects were very good too.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the next one then. Then we finally saw Captain America. Found one of the last screens in the city playing Captain America Brave New World. And that was disappointing.
I was so bored.
It was surprisingly boring, to be honest.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. I don't know if it was just because we waited so long to see it, but I felt like, I mean, I think I had said to you early on, you could see this without me because I wasn't.
Yeah.
Like the trailer didn't get me excited about it.
See, I felt the opposite. I was like, oh, if this movie leans into being like kind of like Winter Soldier, where it's gritty, it's ground forces, it's spy work, it's guns in the street, stuff like that. I feel like it's kind of interesting, but then it gets away from that and it's never a threat. I think that's the problem is that like by making him the Captain America that he is with the vibranium shield, the vibranium wings, like he's dispatching all of the more interesting part of the threat very easily. And you give me a movie with Red Hulk and then he's barely in it. So it's like that you kind of like wasted having that character in the movie. It's like, yeah, you get like a great action sequence kind of at the end, but meh, you know, if you're going to give me Hulk in a movie, especially Red Hulk, like seeing the president rampage as Red Hulk, I think should have been a much larger part of the movie. And I understand why it's piecemealed out, but this movie's like over 2 hours long. Doesn't need to be that long.
No.
You bring back a character from a previous Hulk movie that everybody's forgotten about for the longest time, just for like the sake of the Easter egg.
Who was that?
Samuel Stearns, the thinker. I think he's the leader, actually.
Oh. The villain.
Yeah, the brainhead guy.
Yeah. Right? I didn't remember him.
I just feel like Giancarlo Esposito is such a good actor that if you work a story around him being the head of like this serpent society, you have a good story there. But instead, they make him like the secondary cast-off villain in favor of bringing back Tim Blake Nelson as Samuel Stearns. And like, I don't know, that story just was...
I was lost most of it.
That's what I'm saying. They brought back this character from this other movie. I think it was from the Ed Norton Hulk movie.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, I saw that one.
That's what I'm talking about, right? So in the Ed Norton Hulk movie, Ed Norton is Hulk. Ross is played by William Hurt. So you recast these roles already in the franchise. Like William Hurt passed, you have to do it. I get that. But to then bring back the villain who like has an Easter egg at the end of that movie where Hulk blood drips into his head wound and makes him the leader. To sort of like rely on that, he should have been the secondary villain and make Giancarlo the main villain. I don't want to say should. Should is a word I don't like using. I would have liked Giancarlo to be the main villain. Like, because we saw what he did in Breaking Bad, and he's such a good cerebral villain.
Yeah.
Just put Gustavo Fring, put Gus as the villain here, and let Sidewinder be that kind of character, and like he's out, like let him be the one who's thinking, and maybe he's working with the leader, he breaks the leader out of prison or something like that. But like, you, the way they designed even Tim Blake Nelson's look in the comics, like he's got this giant head, like it's ridiculous. So they wanted to make him look more realistic, but then like it just looks like he's got a scrotum head, and I don't know, just it didn't work for me in any meaningful way. And it's unfortunate because I like Anthony Mackie. I liked the show that he did with Sebastian Stan, but Sebastian Stan's like just got a cameo in this to like show his face. I feel like there's a very good, interesting subtext about sort of what it means to be like a black Captain America. And the director, Julius Ona, directed Loose, which had Kelvin Harrison, Naomi Watts, and Tim Roth and Octavia Spencer. And I feel like that the commentary that exists in that movie is sort of what you would want to bring to this movie. But it's almost as if, it's probably as if he was not allowed to actually have that kind of commentary. It's like it's there, but that's not the point of the movie at all, where it really kind of should be. And maybe the show dealt with it a little bit, and maybe that's why they didn't do it. But like, how do you bring in the director that made Loose and then you
tell
like
him not to do that?
Yeah, you handcuff him basically. So I mean, I feel like maybe you would have let Ryan Coogler do that because of the success of Black Panther, but maybe not as well. And you also have like the other character, the like the first Captain America, the first super soldier, who's also black. And there's just like there's not enough there. It's too invested in having to have the jokey stuff with his buddy, you know.
That wasn't even that funny.
It wasn't. Yeah, well, all of the movies, unfortunately, now that sort of come out under the umbrella are stuck with, well, we have to have this tone of humor because, like, that's kind of what people want to see. But, like, this movie's been getting shit on since it came out. It's got a 5.9 IMDb, a 42 Metascore. I get it, kind of, you know. I would have liked something different, that's all. I feel like this was a situation where maybe they needed to wait.
Yeah, I think I got up to go to the bathroom at one point and I needed to walk and like stretch my legs because it was taking so long for this movie to continue and like wrap up. And when I came back, I still didn't feel like I missed anything.
Well, because you're like you're introducing a new character. Like it was kind of like messy. You're introducing a new character as the president. We know Joaquin Torres already, but then we're introducing like a new Black Widow character. You're bringing back Samuel Stearns' character from another movie that people have like forgotten about already because you didn't do anything with that Easter egg from 15 years ago. Then you're bringing back Isaiah Bradley, the super soldier character. Then you're introducing Giancarlo. You're introducing, like, the way that they introduce Serpent Society is, like, they mention it once, they don't tell you about what it is, and then it's over, and, like, those characters are out of the movie by the halfway point. So it's like, they did the other Captain America movie with Robert Redford and how he was like a politician, but he was really working for Hydra, like this secret Nazi organization that had infiltrated all of these levels of government, right? But there was an emphasis on who Hydra is, where they come from, what their ideology is, how they've infiltrated all this stuff. Like Serpent Society was just kind of like a word that they threw into the movie to pacify comic book fans that want the authenticity. And then you include a guy, Sidewinder, who they give by name. But then there's the other guy, Copperhead, who they don't mention by name. So it's like, why do you even have this? Why do you have this? Why do you name him Copperhead to reference a snake, but then you don't actually like mention that? Like, what does the symbolism of the snake mean? You need to tell us, you need to teach us about why Serpent Society is important, not just throw them into the movie as some like fish food for comic book fans.
Yeah.
So this movie didn't make anybody happy. It didn't make comic book fans happy. It didn't make the general public happy. So like I just don't know what the end goal of this was. It's like you're playing both sides. They're afraid to piss off the comic book fans, so they include Sam Stearns, they include Serpent Society, they sprinkle it with Easter eggs to make like the comic book fans happy, but then they don't commit to that. And then like the movie stuff is light because they're spending their energy elsewhere. And it's just, I don't know. Yeah, it was, it's, I don't know if it's just these movies from this year, but they're, last year I think I saw 10 movies total that I didn't like. This year I've already seen like three.
Yeah, it's barely April.
Yeah, and it's like, I didn't want to say that, like, oh, I hate this movie or anything, because I don't.
Yeah.
It was just super meh. It shouldn't have been boring, and it was boring, and that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
And I feel bad for Anthony Mackie, because I do like him in the role. And I
yeah,
just,
me too, and I like him in other roles, too, and I liked him in, what was it, Falcon, right?
Yeah.
Before Captain
like,
America?
Strip out his stupid friend, strip out Serpent Society, forget about, you know, Sam Stearns and all this side story nonsense, and just make it a headbutting contest between the president, who has a very contentious relationship with Captain America, and the guy who is now the new Captain America, and even sprinkle the seeds of the president being a racist and just like commit to that. But yeah, didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Trying to play both sides. Tell you, half measures don't work. Okay, so let's see what else we got. And then we went to see Black Bag, Soderbergh's new spy movie, which I really liked. I liked it better than Soderbergh's other movie this year, which was The Presence, or maybe just Presence, not The Presence. But I like that Soderbergh is a super economical filmmaker. He knows what he wants. He's always got his vision. I love Fassbender, so great to see him sort of back in the spotlight again. Missed him for several years while he was sort of out of the limelight. Great role for him to be sort of like the meticulous, thoughtful type of intelligent character that we like seeing. It was a good role for Cate Blanchett too. Intriguing spy thriller, and not bloated either. Only like an hour and a half. Knows what it wants to do. Gets in, gets out. Tells a concise story. Does so with style. I know a lot of people like didn't like love it, and that's okay. Like, I don't even know if I would be like, oh my God, it's amazing, but I did like it. And if Soderbergh were to lean into making more movies in this universe, I mean, I'd probably watch Fassbender and Blanchett go at it again with those two characters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a scene at the dinner table where he drugs them all with like truth serum and then starts questioning them. And that scene's a lot of fun. So I'm glad that some people at least have expressed that they liked it. A lot of people I know, like in my film circle, liked it a lot, which is cool. But I did want to just quickly mention Marissa Abella, who we saw as Amy Winehouse.
Oh, has, right.
Yeah, she pops up here. We see Regis Jean Page, Tom Burke. Who else is in there? Naomi Harris. Oh, yeah, and Pierce Brosnan, of course.
Mm.
He's Arthur Stieglitz. He doesn't do a lot of late. Doesn't sound like a German, but Stieglitz is very German. He's good. It's like the anti-James Bond role for him.
Yeah.
Where he's now M, but he's less motherly. A lot less motherly.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see him kind of do some other things, too.
Yeah. And it's still fairly new, and I would say the difference is like James Bond feels, at least a lot of the new James Bond films feel very much like they are American action movies, like in the vein of Bourne Identity, which is fine. I like those movies. But this feels, even though it's made by an American, feels a lot more like a European spy thriller. It's slower, it's more meticulous, it's about the mystery and the unraveling of that mystery. It's not really like car chases and motorcycles and stuff like that. It's not jumping out of airplanes.
It's more psychological.
Yeah, a lot more psychological. So it's interesting that we have like the filmmakers making the British spy movie very Americanized, and then taking now an American filmmaker making the British spy movie and making it very much of that sort of like tongue-in-cheek British style. So
yeah. Cool.
I like that one. And then I guess we rounded it out with Death of a Unicorn, which was the most recent. I think it came out the day that we saw it, or the day before, or something like that. Right?
Did we see it that fast?
I think so, just because it was out and it was the timing more than anything. It just happened to be out at the time where it was most convenient. I should have said that Black Bag, I think it had like a 7-something on IMDb, an 80-something Metascore. Death of a Unicorn, 6.4 IMDb, 52 Metascore. And this is a movie that definitely dangles its cast in front of you as bait.
For sure.
the Jenna Ortega upselling and the Paul Rudd upselling is definitely a big part of it, but neither of them were the kind of commercialized, sellable versions of themselves in this movie. And I told you after we watched it, I was like, I think this movie might be a better movie without either of them in it.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have seen it if either of them weren't in it.
And the people that made the movie know that.
Yeah.
They know they needed something. Like, if you make this movie with just Richard Grant, Will Poulter, and Tia Leone and that family, it's not going to do well. It's not.
I mean,
that's the X's and O's of it.
Yeah. I think I told you immediately and I was like, this movie was bad. And I don't say that a lot either, but if you weren't there, I would have walked out kind of a movie. I know you don't walk out of movies, but I was like, I was so uncomfortable because I regretted that we saw this at a theater without recliners where I could have just slept through it.
Yeah, that is like, there's a very low endorsement, but
yeah, I'm sorry. I love Paul Rudd. I'm a big Paul Rudd fan and I like Jenna Ortega, but they were not enough. They were not enough for this. And if we had recliners, I would have just been like, okay, wake me up when it's done so we can go.
Yeah. Well, remember what I said about like too many avenues? This is dark comedy, dark fantasy, monster horror, comedy, fantasy, horror, thriller. Like, it doesn't pick one. I feel like the movie that maybe does it the most justice is just being a very dark comedy about this shitty family. And I thought Will Poulter was great in this movie. I thought he was really funny. I know you didn't care for him.
I agree. Yeah.
His portrayal of like the rich, bratty idiot son who has a silver spoon up his ass and never has to do anything, so he just takes on different hobbies and he doesn't even see any of those through, but him just being rich is like his identity. And I feel like a lot of his line reading and his line delivery is excellent, but it's buried in a movie that doesn't know how to highlight it. And so when you give us the main characters of Jenna Ortega, who we're supposed to sympathize with, and we do for the most part, and then Paul Rudd, who's like kind of shitty throughout 90% of the movie. So you don't even get the Paul Rudd that is the box office draw kind of Paul Rudd. So you're not really like cheering for them either, which makes that whole story arc kind of meaningless in the end.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's why I'm like, just strip that out. And let Richard Grant and Tia Leone and Will Poulter just be this shitty family. They have these servants that they treat like shit. Let the servants be the one who hit the unicorn with the car and have to explain it. Like, you don't need the whole Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega story. Just like feels like it doesn't belong in the movie. And honestly, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it didn't really belong there and they forced it in order to make a reason for those characters to exist. And I honestly don't know, but it too was kind of boring. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as boring as Captain America, which is crazy. When you think of like a Captain America movie was more boring than this is weird.
I feel like it was more boring than Captain America.
Okay. I think at least with this movie, I saw like the potential for it. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a good movie somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. If you let me
trick it.
Yeah. I think there is, and I see why this is struggling, but I saw like some people love this movie.
Really?
Yeah. I saw some people were really like about it, but yeah, for me, just the Jenna Ortega like moody sucking on her vape thing, that like things I hate in movies, horrible pet peeves, fake smoking. Like if you're gonna have a character who smokes cigarettes in your movie, that person should probably be a smoker rather than forcing some person who isn't a smoker to be a smoker for the sake of your movie. And if you're not going to do that, remove the cigarette from the movie altogether. And then even worse than that is this vaping. Vaping is way worse cinematically. Like, ugh.
Well, and also
smoking like feels natural. It looks natural. You can tell, as an ex-smoker myself, you can tell when somebody is a smoker, like their body language, the way they smoke, the way they light it, the way they hold it, all that stuff. But with the vape, it's like you're sticking a lightsaber in your mouth and having smoke shoot out after that. It's really bad.
But not only that, there was literally no point to that for this movie.
Yeah, other than to show that, like, she vapes.
Yeah, but you don't even need to show that. Like, you can already tell she's the angst teenager or young adult. You know, she's got the colored hair and she's not talking to dad. Like, you didn't.
They even put acne on her for the purpose of, like, erasing it.
And it looked so fake.
It did.
But you don't even need to add the vape to it. And I worry about the normalization around that for the younger generation in general, similar to smoking, because it's not cool.
It's not. That's what I'm saying. Like, at least smoking on camera, like the way that it used to be portrayed, looked cool. So I understand why people are like, oh, yeah, I want to look cool like, you know, Frank Sinatra or something. But like, this doesn't look cool.
No.
So but I don't think it's also like portrayed in a way that's supposed to not look cool, because she's vaping her big, stupid lightsaber. But then she's also vaping a stizzy thing. So it's like she's smoking weed, but they don't really like. They don't allude to the fact that it's weed. It's like, if you're paying attention and you know, you know.
Did you see it said Stizzy?
No, but it's the little, like, flat rectangular one. I know what it is. Sorry, I'm not promoting Stizzy here, but that's their design. But then the other one is like a mod, like the one that I used to have, where it's like a little battery with a big mouthpiece on and then just. And it's like, Jenna Ortega smokes. Just let her smoke if that's the case. But it's like, no, like. The character that we're portraying, she's of the age where she would be vaping, and eliminate all of that.
It was just so bad. Like, I haven't felt this way about a movie in a really long time that I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't that down on it, but
I was so down on it. I know. Plus, I was really uncomfortable physically, so I think that didn't help. Like, I had no patience.
Yeah, that's fair, and I think, you know, sort of how you, the energy you have when you go into a movie is. If you're in there, like, I'm already not thrilled, like, it's not going to be a great experience.
I mean, I was fine going into it. I was excited for it because I love Paul Rudd. And I hadn't heard anything about it. Had no expectations. But the first, like, 5 minutes, I was like, oh, dear God, this is not going to be good. We could just leave right now. But I know you don't leave movies.
I don't. Like, to use a boxing term, like, I have a good chin when it comes to bad movies.
I don't.
I might have brain damage because of that chin. Got CTE.
I should have left and come back and picked you up.
Well, I've got bad movie CTE, but, like, you think I would like this movie if that's the case. I just want to see, like, the Will Poulter character given free rein to be himself.
I mean, I think he was good in the role, but I think it's kind of similar to, like, when we first started Schitt's Creek. It was hard to, like, accept, like, okay, we're supposed to root for this family. And I personally didn't laugh once during this movie, and I didn't find any of his lines funny.
Yeah.
So, I know you laughed a couple times, but it was like, it felt like it was trying too hard to try and get a punchline out of something, and the timing was off, and I was just like, this isn't even funny. This is just disturbing.
Well, I think with something like Schitt's Creek, like, you're supposed to end up being on, like, you're supposed to understand the family. I think that's not what this movie could be. This movie should be this horrible family getting decimated by a unicorn, you know? But there's, like, this whole, like, side research, and it's like, what the fuck is it? Like, I'm curious if it's like that was really in the research side of things, because you're making a movie about a mythical creature. Do you really have to imply that there is, like, historical context for this, or just let it be a monster movie? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like something like Abigail, where I know you didn't see that, but that is just like a bunch of bad people doing a bad thing, but they are charismatic and funny. And the vampire ballerina fucks him up. And so, like, I feel like that's kind of what this movie should have gone for, could have gone for, what I would have liked it to go for. But
you're shitting a lot.
I'm shitting, I know. I'm going to shit all over this. Okay, well, I'll just move on to the next two. One of them was Locked, which was the horror movie with Bill Skarsgård and Anthony Hopkins over the phone. It was good. I like movies that more or less take place in one location.
Me too. I love Phone Booth.
Yeah. I think you would like this movie, honestly.
Okay. I'll give it a chance when it's streaming then.
Yeah, Phone Booth is, I think, a good comparison because similar phone, you're stuck in a situation. This person, like, knows your past and you're there for sort of, like, cosmic, karmic reasons. And Bill is good. Anthony Hopkins, I would have liked to see, like, more of him, but he is a voice on the phone in the movie, so it's, like, kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. But Bill is very good. And it's interesting to see him in this kind of role as well, where it's like he's playing a little bit more mature of a character than we've seen. Well, despite Nosferatu, where he's like several hundred years old, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then speaking of Nosferatu, I also watched the documentary Nosferatu, The Real Story, as I was preparing for a Nosferatu conversation on my friend Newman's podcast, Movies for Days. It's a very interesting documentary about the preservation of the original film and how it almost didn't exist and the lengths that people had to go through in the film community in the 1920s in order to actually make sure that it saw the light of day. So if you're like a film historian, it's pretty interesting. And especially if you are into Nosferatu, I think it's definitely worth a watch. But those were the two that I saw independently. But the reason that we didn't see a lot of movies is because our dog, our mascot, for the most part here at the Scheist Podcast Network, she crossed the Rainbow Bridge. See her little puppy picture right there. A week ago today, yeah. We had to say goodbye to her. she was old, and as I said on her little eulogy, I guess, on
Memorial.
Yeah, on Bad Movies We Love. And as I shared on some social media channels, she had a lot of like health issues, but somehow she battled her way to just being old for a large breed dog, and she just ended up passing because she was old, not because of her cancer or her Cushing's disease or her weird unexplained blackout seizures, or she didn't break a bone or anything with her arthritis. She just, that last night she had some pizza and was like, fuck, finally had real pizza,
not just the crust.
Yeah. And she finally, you know, told us it was time. But I know the microphones are sensitive, but they don't pick it up. But when we used to record, we would have our baby camera on watching her outside the door, and she would just headbutt the door here and bang on the gate that separates the kitchen from the living room walkway. And she told us when she wanted to eat, when she wanted attention, when she wanted to be with us, and she's going to be missed. It was a very, very sweet girl, and for the people that got to know her and that she really took a liking to, she let you know it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she did not like us having the door closed.
She didn't.
She made sure we heard that.
You could just hear the metal sign here against the door just rattling over and over again as she slammed her head into it.
Open. Mm-hmm. Come sit on the couch with me.
Yeah. So, Rids, I hope you're not listening to this podcast up wherever you are. Hopefully you're running around at full speed and 100% health, chasing the big tennis balls in the sky.
And the cats.
Yeah, chase the cats, but hopefully,
don't hurt them, though.
Well, if there's a animal heaven, hopefully the cats are durable and maybe they're bigger and they can fight back.
Yeah.
They're all equal strength and size.
Getting her gooby kisses.
Yeah. Well, we're back. We're also, if you're listening to this, we host Hers, His, and Ours, which is a TV podcast where we're covering one show that's each of our favorites at a time. And then we're going to talk, the third version of that will be a show that we both love. So we're starting with Brothers and Sisters, which was your pick. I think we're 6 episodes into 110. So we'll work our way through that. Then we're going to pivot to a show that was my favorite that you haven't seen. And then we'll pivot to a show that is one that we both love that we'll just share with everybody. And we'll pivot to that and pivot
that I, of course, love a little bit more than you.
But you do.
But we both love it. And it's still a comfort show for both of us. But
it is. Yeah, it is. And so if you listen to this and you like listening to us here, check out Hers, His, and Ours, spelled H-O-U-R-S, like time, you know, the double meaning of hours, and we're spending hours. It's really smart.
So smart.
That's right. Pat myself on the back.
Good job. And the first hour show, we used the theme for our wedding in a lot of ways.
We did, yeah.
So that is a good hours to start with.
Yeah, of course it is. But we also, as part of that show, we decided that we're going to do a version of this called This Week on the Couch, where we just talk about TV shows that we're that we're like currently watching.
Yeah.
So tonight we're going to watch The Pitt. We're going to get caught up with Dr. Odyssey. And then when we record, we'll talk about those. Plus, we binge watch Mid-Century Modern, which you and I have gone to. I went to one taping. You went to multiple tapings of that show here. So we'll have a few more shows to talk about. Maybe we'll even have started like Adolescence or made more progress on White Lotus or something by the time we get there. But yeah, we'll have at least those 3 to talk about. And
the documentaries, I think, right?
Oh, yes. We did watch a couple of hour-long TV documentaries that we'll throw into the mix as sort of a curveball just to add some runtime onto that show.
All right.
Cool.
That's good.
Cool. Well, thank you for being back with us. If you are, if you're not, then you're not going to hear this anyway. So until next time, you take care of yourselves. If you have a pet, give them a hug and a kiss for me. We'll see you next time.
Yep.
Thank you for tuning back in and for taking the time to listen to this episode. I used to say you were stuck with us doing this until we figured out that other project that we were working on, but we figured it out. So if you enjoy hanging out with us, then make sure to check out Hers, His, and Ours, H-O-U-R-S. That is our new television-based show where Kristen and I will be sharing favorite TV shows that the other one of us has not seen, and then the two of us will share with the audience a TV show that we both love. And we also do This Week on the Couch, where we just talk about stuff that we watched on TV. You can find that and all the other shows in the Scheist Podcast Network by looking for Scheist Pod Net on Instagram, Blue Sky, and Twitter. And until next time, take care, everybody.